Well, hey guys, Drew Powell here. I'm the creative arts pastor at Crosspoint and also the host of the Anything's Possible podcast. And here's the deal. If you're listening to this, then you're one of the many amazing subscribers to the Crosspoint Church audio podcast. And man, we are so glad you're here. We hope you've been loving these added episodes of the Anything's Possible podcast over the past few weeks. And on the show, we say everyone has a story to tell and a step to take, and that with Jesus, anything's possible. And I actually have a step for you to take today. I need you to take just a second to subscribe to the Anything's Possible podcast, because we'll only be streaming here for a few more weeks, and I don't want you to miss a single conversation. We have some killer guests lined up, like my dear friend Bob Goff. We got Annie F. Downs coming on. We got a lot of great, amazing folks coming on. So go ahead and make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcast to the Anything's Possible podcast today. Well, what's up, my friends? This is your host, Drew Powell, and you're listening to the Anything's Possible podcast, where we believe everyone has a story to tell and a step to take. And today, we've got a great friend of mine on this podcast. He's been at Crosspoint for a long time. His name is Ketrick. Now, Ketrick is amazing. He's doing amazing work with the Teen Dream Center. And man, I don't know if I can say this or not. It's one of my favorite episodes that we've done so far. Just amazing stuff. You'll want to listen to the whole thing. Stay to the end, because he gives some great encouragement. And you, I don't know, you might want to share this episode with someone too, because it's so powerful work happening right here in our city. So I want to dive right into it. Here's our interview with Ketrick. Welcome to the Anything's Possible podcast. Well, today is a great episode because I got my buddy Ketrick. Dude, I just love you, man. You're like one of my favorite people on the planet. I'm not just saying that because you're here.
I appreciate that.
Usually I prepare for these. I haven't prepared anything today.
No need.
I don't.
It's part of a seven.
You're an Enneagram 7, aren't you?
Come on. This is why this is going to be so great.
We're just going to have fun.
We've prepared nothing.
It's going to be a meaningful episode of nonsense, but dude, you're a fun dude to be around.
Thank you.
You're being all like calm and cool right now, but you're normally bouncing off the walls. That's this your podcast persona?
Yeah, this is how. Well, it's just, I feel I'm tethered, you know? Yeah. I feel like I've got a leash.
Yeah, is it the headphones, right, the microphone?
Yeah, everything. It's like I got to sit in this little telephone booth.
Yeah, dude, thanks for doing this.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I love what you're doing here at Crosspoint. I love what you're doing in our city. Yeah. You're a huge part of just the story of Crosspoint, and a lot of people may or may not know, if they're new to Crosspoint, exactly who you are and what you're doing. So I'm excited to hear your story.
Yeah.
And then also what I love about you, and probably why we connect so much, is you're a dreamer. You've got big, God's given you dreams for our city. And part of this, as you know, this podcast, Anything's Possible, man, we just love anything that's happening in our city, anything God is doing in the city of Nashville and surrounding areas. And I know that's you.
Yeah.
Like, you have a heart for this city. Tell us, first of all, what do you love about Nashville?
Man, we as a family have been here 9 years, and so we've seen a ton of change. If you've been around, all of us know it's just changing like crazy.
Yeah.
And it is a place for dreamers to come. I mean, everyone talks about it, but it's true. It's a place where dreamers can come and just figure it out. Like, it's like everyone's flying by the seat of their pants, it feels like, with just moving here.
Yeah.
And it's fun because there's
you
just
love
such
that,
this,
don't you?
Oh, my gosh. What's the next thing? Let's go.
Well, and you're a relational dude, so you love people coming in and out, and you connect easy with people.
And change. I love change.
Okay.
So change is something that I love navigating.
Yeah.
So all the time.
I bet your staff, your team loves that.
Sort of. Yes.
You have a great team. You got a great staff of people. So tell us a little bit about your story. Where did you grow up? And tell us your background.
So originally from Oklahoma.
Okay.
So grew up in the panhandle of Oklahoma, Tornado Alley, lived in a trailer park till I was 10, had a perm mullet, and that's true, and I had that till fifth grade.
Can you please somehow send the mullet picture?
Not a problem.
So that we can link, we need to link that somehow.
It's on the background of my phone, so I'll send it up. No, I'm just kidding. It's not, but I will send it to you. Yeah.
You were a legend as a kid. I've seen the kid pictures.
Yeah. Yeah, I was.
Just born for greatness, honestly.
the hairstyle for sure. And so lived in Oklahoma in the panhandle and windy, crazy, and moved around Oklahoma quite a bit.
Okay.
Faith story, second time to ever step foot in church. Someone tricked me. There was a girl that was cute in my English class, asked me to go to church. And so I thought it was a date. So I said, all right,
missionary dating.
Come on, baby. And then I got to church and her dad was the youth pastor. And he said, there's a spring break retreat. And basically he said that there's going to be go-karts. And I was like, sign me up. And then I asked her if she was going. She said yes. I was like, date number two.
There you go.
So then she didn't have a clue about any of that. And then I went on this spring break retreat in the second night.
Yeah.
They got up and talked about Jesus, needed a relationship with him. I wasn't raised in church. No one told me about God.
Was that like one of the first times you just heard the gospel, period? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, I knew, like, you believe in God because that's what good people do. But right. I didn't even know I was lost.
Right.
And so it was like I got tricked. I thought I was going there for a girl in go-karts, and I found God. And Jesus. I mean, it was just, that was the moment for me. And I had a reading disability growing up. So I really couldn't understand anything I read. Comprehension and that kind of thing was really hard, part of that. And so when I came in a relationship with Jesus, like I picked up the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And that summer I moved to a new town. And man, I just devoured the Word. And I read, it was back when the Message just came out, just the New Testament, before they even had the Old. And the youth group signed it and gave me this Bible and sent me off. And I read that from front to back three times that summer.
Wow.
And I remember going, oh my gosh, I can understand this.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was like my passion to share it and to share these stories that I'd never heard before and these life-changing disciples and all of that. And it just began to change my world.
How old were you when this happened?
Seventh grade spring break.
Seventh grade spring break.
Yeah. And so that's when it all just kind of shifted for me. And so,
what was middle school or Kedrick like before that?
Oh,
were you pretty wide open?
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Full tilt.
Yeah. I was just loud. Still am. But I mean, they would send me home multiple years. I think it was even like first grade to the third grade. I know every year my teacher would send home a note saying that I need to get my ears checked because they thought something was wrong with me because I was so loud.
Really? They just thought couldn't hear yourself well.
Problems. Yeah. And I was like, no, it's a mouth problem. And so... That was it. Like I was all the time. Yeah. I was just a yeller.
But it's cool to know you now because you hone that passion, that loudness towards the things of God. You live loud, you pray loud, you believe and dream loud. Yeah. But at that time in middle school, that wasn't it wasn't honed in towards the things of Christ yet.
No, I was crazy, man.
Yeah. So when you had this like seventh grade, tried to go after a girl, met Jesus. It seemed like you flipped a switch.
Yeah.
Started devouring the Word of God.
Yeah.
Did that keep you like through high school? Did you stay pretty fired up through?
Yeah. Yeah, I did, but there were some things that I didn't understand. So I had some addiction stuff.
Okay.
I would say that that's the case. I mean, I started looking at things online. Well, back then it wasn't online. It was basically, pornography, but in certain ways, would find that and look at that. And that just became something that was kind of the thing that I kind of kept away. And I kept saying, and no one else knew. And I would say all my life, the thing that I kept finding myself saying is, if I could just overcome this one thing, then I would live for Jesus. So it was kind of that hidden thing, but there was this weirdness of like, man, I'm so passionate about the Word. I'm so passionate about God. I'm so passionate, and it's just oozing out of me. But then there was this other thing over here.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until I was 21, I was in Oklahoma, took a bus to Nashville Passion Conference.
Okay.
And Louis Giglio got up on stage and he said, Colossians 1:27, it's Christ in you, the hope of glory. I had never heard that Christ lived in me.
Hmm.
And I knew, like, I don't know if I did, but it just didn't click.
Right.
And from that moment on, then I began to read Colossians again through a whole new lens. Colossians 3:3, you have died and you're now hidden in Jesus. And I hit my knees when it was Gaylord.
Okay.
That's Bridgestone. But when it was Gaylord, I hit my knees in that auditorium. And I just knew, I finally got it, that it's not just about a ticket to heaven. It's not just about him forgiving me of my sins and forgiving my sins, but he placed a power source in me to help me overcome the things in my life. And that was the moment.
Really?
Yeah, that was the moment where I knew from that moment on, if I chose it, I chose it.
Gotcha.
But I'm free from it if I want to be.
Right.
And so not that there wasn't struggle, not that there wasn't going back and forth,
right.
But I understood if I can renew my mind through his truth,
yeah.
I will walk in freedom and can walk in freedom that I thought I would take this into my marriage. I thought that this would just be the way it is.
Right. This is who I am. It's my identity. I'll just struggle with it forever.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Right.
And it was that realization that I didn't allow that shame to beat me up and say, it's who I am. I'm not who I am. Right. Like right. Paul in Romans 7:17 or 16, first he says right before that, I know the things that I should do that I don't do. Mm-hmm. But then he says, it's not me that sins, it's the sin that lives within me. He is splitting what he does anymore from who he is.
Wow, that's so good.
There's
man.
Still things in me
right.
that aren't lining up with the new spirit in me, but it doesn't define who I am anymore.
Yeah.
And the shame just went away.
So what would you say to people that are listening or watching right now that are connecting the dots on this? There's stuff they're struggling with. There's addictions and there's those different things. Mm-hmm. What encouragement would you give to those that might be wrestling?
You have been given all the Jesus you're ever going to have the moment that you said yes to him. He put all of his spirit in you. The same exact spirit that raised Jesus from the dead lives in you, right? Greater is he that is in you than the one that's in the world.
Right.
So it's already there. So instead of chasing God to get more of him, you have to understand that you already have him. Every single bit of him lives in you. And what we're doing is when we renew our mind through his truth, what's in us flows from us.
Okay.
But for a lot of my life, I chased more of God, trying to get more of him. But when I understood I had it, then I could live from it.
So more just about accessing what is already available to you. So you have this, you've said yes to Christ.
Yeah.
You have this power that lives in you, but we have to somehow, how would you say, is it unlocking what we have access to? How would you say that?
Yeah, so it's clogged. I mean, it's almost like a clogged artery in your heart.
Okay.
Right? Like everything, it's there, but you have to unclog the artery for then it to flow through the rest of the body. It's not an issue of something out there that mm-hmm. I need anymore. When I received him, he came and made his home in me, so now he wants to live through me. Mm-hmm. It's just through renewal of mind. It's not your past that will set you free. It's not your opinion that will set you free. The Bible says it's his truth that sets us free.
Yeah.
But it's a renewal process. Your spirit is brand new. The new you. The old is gone, the new has come. The new that came is the new spirit he placed in you. What's not new is the soul. Your soul's made up of your mind, your will, and your emotions. But if you can renew your soul, that's being renewed,
mm-hmm.
right? Again, Romans 12:2, being renewed. Once you renew that, then it freely just flows from you.
Man, that's good.
It just lines up.
That's so good. I feel like people listening or watching this needs to go back and rewind and capture that again. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of depth in that. And so at 21 is where you started to understand. I mean, I know you've been on a journey.
Sure.
You've been learning this over the past however long. So that didn't just happen overnight. But that was the first moment at this conference that you were like, oh, wait a minute. I'm thinking about this.
Yeah.
This different.
Well, and that's when you understand you have it, then you can use it. Right? So if you have a $20 bill in your wallet, but you don't know it's there, you can't use it. So for so long of my Christian life, I was trying to cover up and do good and do more and chase Jesus and worship more and ask God, I mean, and spend time in worship trying to get him.
Mm-hmm.
And instead he's going, oh, you already got me. You're already mine. You're already mine.
Man.
And not only are you mine, but I'm present. I'm right. present with you. I didn't walk away like a seventh grade girlfriend, right? I didn't walk away when you messed up. You drug me through it, and I'm here at any moment, and you can use it.
That's powerful, bro.
Yeah.
That's so good. So what were you doing at 21 when this happened? Were you in ministry yet?
I wasn't. Okay. So my dad had just, actually from that trip, we were driving back. We were coming over the Memphis Bridge, and my mom called, going back towards Oklahoma. My mom called, and she said, your dad has cancer. And I felt like that last night in the bridge or in the Gaylord Arena at that time, that I felt like the Lord's just saying, feeling like in that last night that the Lord's saying that I'm about to move. They didn't know what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden I get to the bridge and my mom calls and says, your dad's got cancer. Well, instantly I went, Mom, I'm moving home. I'm moving home. I was at UCO, University of Central Oklahoma, going to school there. And it was in that moment, my mom was like, no, you're not moving home. And I said, no, I'm moving home. And I just felt like I was supposed to go and work my dad's Little Debbie route. My dad's Little Debbie man selling oatmeal cream pies.
Oh my gosh.
Zebra cakes.
That feels like a dream job right there.
Well, it's better than drugs. It's the number one snack cake in the world.
Dude, I love a Little Debbie.
I was a Little Debbie man. So.
You were a Little Debbie man.
Yeah. So I moved back to Durant, quit school, went and worked my dad's Little Debbie route for 8 months while he was going through just all of the stuff he was going through.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in that time, man, I learned so much about the Lord. I learned so much in that time, and you know how that is. Like when you feel like you're not doing something, mm-hmm. you feel like you're the opposite. You're going down a journey that's opposite than what you're supposed to be doing at your age. You quit school, you're working your 50-year-old dad's route or whatever at that time, you know, and you just feel like you're not in the middle of what you're supposed to be doing. But through that whole process,
but God was revealing himself.
Oh my gosh.
Man, I think there's a direct correlation between zebra cakes and the will of God though. Don't you think?
I'll lick stripes off some zebra cakes.
I don't think there's any theological backing for that, but
it's just manna.
It feels
it's what it is.
You think the manna was a zebra cake in the Old Testament?
Don't quote me. Don't play this, but yes.
So you do this and God is showing up to you as on your little Debbie route in a way you didn't expect.
Yeah.
What happens next?
So then my dad, he is cancer free within 8 to 9 months, still cancer free today, still alive.
Oh, awesome.
Most amazing, just awesome. And I came back up to a church in Edmond that I was volunteering for 2 years, which is Life Church there in Oklahoma.
Yeah. Little startup church.
Yeah. Little, I don't know if you've heard of it anyway. And
Life Church is literally one of the, I think it's the biggest church in the world right now. It is. Yeah.
Yes. And it totally is. And so I was a volunteer there at the Edmond campus before that. And I went to a Sunday night service, hadn't been to church in a while just because I was working 6 days a week at the working little Debbie route. And I walked in, and after the service, the campus pastor just saw me. He's like, hey, and he knew me because I'd done a few speaking things at that student ministry in the past. And he just said, hey, what are you doing? And I said, oh, I don't know. I think, you know, my dad's done with cancer, but I think I'm going to stay there and probably speak part-time and help my dad with the little Debbie route while I try to figure it out. And he said, well, would you pray about maybe applying here? We got a student pastor position open. And so I was like, no, I'm good. Thanks. In my head, but I was like, all right, I'll pray about it. Right. And I left there. And I remember leaving there on 2nd Avenue in Edmond, going towards the Starbucks. And the only thing I prayed, I said, Lord, if you want me to do this, I just need to know that my father's okay and that you're going to take care of him. So I walked in the Starbucks. Back then, my metabolism was better than it is now. So I ordered a white chocolate mocha frappuccino.
Oh, so
praise
good.
Praise the Lord.
Give him glory.
Liquid manna. And so that's what I ordered and sat down. And I opened my devotional that day to August 7th. August 7th, the devotional said, now! Exclamation point. And the scripture said, this would-be disciple went to wait and bury his father before going with Jesus. And I went, hold on. And then it said, this would-be disciple went to wait and bury his father before going with Jesus. God knew this man, and he knew this man's father. God would have taken care of this man's father if the son would have followed Jesus.
No
way. Time to minister to others may pass you by. The time to respond is now.
What?
And I went, are you come on.
Like, I'm not the brightest bulb, but this is pretty on the nose.
Come on.
Yeah.
And so I called my parents. My mom had just given her life to Jesus in the last 6 months of that moment. And that, for me, my parents both were crying. And they're like, man, this is what you're supposed to do. This is what you're supposed to do.
So you had their blessing.
Yeah. And 2 weeks later, I'm on staff with a student ministry of like 600, had no idea what I was doing.
So it wasn't a little.
And so there was more than one. Yeah. I was not the only student pastor at that campus, but I was one of them. And it was just this amazing 5 years of learning how to do ministry and flying by the seat of your pants.
Was that something, did you feel, we use this word called, but did you feel like at some point you were going to be ministry, or was that out of the blue for you? Or did you know that was kind of the track you were on?
I thought I would always work with churches.
Okay.
I didn't know if I was going to work in the church as a pastor, but I always felt called to share the word. I always felt called to teach people the stories that have become so fresh to me because I'd heard them for the first time as a kid. Like, it was just like when other kids heard them growing up, I heard them for the first time with new ears and would share things, and people would be like, oh my gosh, like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And so I always thought that's what I would do, but I didn't know if I was ever going to be like a student pastor per se, but it was so clear.
Yeah.
And so that's how
it happened. You spent 5 years at Life Church. Now talk about just the progression to back to Nashville, obviously. And I didn't know, but so Nashville had a kind of a special place in your heart because of this moment with God at the conference.
Yeah.
But tell us about did you come to Nashville for Crosspoint?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Blake Bergstrom back in the day, he was on staff at Life for a period of time when I was there. So that's how we met. And basically, we had just become really good friends. And he called me 2 years into being at Crosspoint as the Nashville campus pastor. Yep. And he just said, hey, I got this position open, and I really wondered if you'd apply for it. In my head, we're like, no. Me and my wife are just about to get married at that time. And I was just like, no, we're good, in my head. And then the flood happened in 2010.
Okay.
And then, so then they put it on hold, and I was like, okay, good. And then he called me a couple months later, and he said, hey, I know you said you're good, but will you come out and just check it out? And within a day apart, him and then also the Hendersonville Life Church campus asked me to apply within a day apart.
Wow.
And so I was like, okay, Lord, maybe you're calling us out here. So we came out to check it out, and we interviewed at both places, and we just felt just like we were supposed to be here.
Yeah. And how many years ago was that?
Now? 9 years ago.
9 years.
Yeah.
That's incredible, man. And so you started as the Nashville student pastor.
Yeah. So I was a Nashville student pastor for over 4 years.
Okay.
And then that's when we transitioned from Charlotte, the days of Charlotte, the Nashville campus here in the Park Avenue Baptist Church, to then we moved downtown Nashville.
Okay.
And at that point, and I don't know if it still is, but at that point it was the highest crime rate, highest poverty rate in Nashville.
Wow.
Right? So right across the street, you know, all kinds of craziness.
Yep.
Everything around here was crazy.
Yeah.
So in that, I just started going to Maplewood High School, started going to lunches, hanging out with kids, started sitting in lunchrooms. Who's this creepy white guy hanging out here with us? Who is this dude? Why does he keep showing up? Why does he keep coming back?
Right.
Getting to know their names. Hey, Antonio, love your shoes. Hey, you know, whatever.
You're just out there.
I'm just out there.
So after
I get to know these kids' names, and I'm showing up every week, and they're like, creepy uncle. And then then eventually they're like, oh, I kind of like creepy uncle. And
yeah.
So then they... within 8 to 9 months, the student ministry at this location was like 95% inner city.
Yeah.
And I started to get to know these kids' stories. And first kid that came up to me, I remember on a Wednesday night, I was talking, and I just said, you know, you can't do this alone. And anyway, I said, if you need help, you know, come. And one of the kids walked up to me, and he said, Ketrick, I just realized tonight to sell drugs to keep my mom off the street isn't okay. Mm-hmm. I believed that I was doing something good with the money, so it made it okay to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the moment where I went, oh man, Jesus is the answer, but you're 12 steps over there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in that moment for me that I went, man, we gotta do something more. And so for me, that was when I just said, Lord, I don't know how to do this. I've never done this. But if you would want to use me in some sort of way, in that way, I see a need and I don't know truly how to do it. I've never done this.
Yeah.
I do it. And so I took a group of kids that summer on a mission trip to the LA Dream Center, and we got to see everything they were doing. It blew my mind. We took like 18 kids out there to check it out. And I just went, what if we did, instead of a dream center for adults? Because I saw these men, it's amazing. If you've ever been out there, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
But you know, we're seeing these men rehabilitated at 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s that are doing this 2-year discipleship program. And I just had this thought in my head, is what if we started early? And what if at their 30s, 40s, and 50s, they were living the life that God had for them?
Mm.
What would that look like?
Yeah.
And so I came back with this idea and just brought it out there. And man, Crosspoint loved the idea and just jumped on board. And in that December, we raised a ton of money to start this program.
Yeah. What year was that?
That was in 2015.
2015.
Yeah.
So that's how the Teen Dream Center.
That's it, man.
Was born. It was out of you doing student ministry.
Yeah.
And feeling like, hey, this is great, but there's steps in between where they're at and where the church is at, and we got to do something to bridge that gap.
And the thing was, is every one of them, the common denominator is they didn't have any fathers.
Yeah.
Every single one of them. None of them. And that was the deal. And we know this. Like, if you look at our world, you can see all the statistics that tell us 63% of the suicide rate is because of fatherless, right? Mm-hmm. You look at runaways, is 90% of the homeless and runaways, 90% come from fatherless homes. When you look at all of these different statistics, 71% of the dropout rate. So there's all this incarceration. You can go on, and they can be linked back to a fatherless generation.
Yeah.
And it's something I knew nothing about. I had an amazing dad.
Yeah.
But it was in that process that I just said, okay, we can do that. We can give every kid a father and a mother in their lives. It may not be blood, but they can be an advocate in their corner to love them and to show them things that maybe they didn't get growing up. So where the gap is, where the disorder may be, the things that they just didn't have someone to tell them, mom is doing her best, but she doesn't have that father's voice. There's just something that a father can only give. And in that, we just said, we'll do it. We'll do it. And so we started, and the three things that we do is mentorship, discipleship, and purpose. Mm-hmm. And so mentorship, every kid has a one-on-one mentor, an advocate in their corner, someone to be there, to listen to them, to walk out life, to you know, be that voice for them.
Right.
And then we do discipleship. We teach in some sort of way. You know, we try to teach it in a way just in chunks to get them to understand.
Yeah.
When it comes to the love of God, it's really hard for someone that has not had a father in their life to understand the love of God.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay to come in and say that that's where they are.
Yeah.
It's okay to give them a space for them to question, but also help them lead them to the truth. And so
Yeah. We
hope that we can connect with them, so that then they can connect with God,
right?
So our mission statement is to help them break free from the lies of their past to fully live the life that God has for them.
That's awesome.
And we believe that happens through encountering Jesus is what Yeah. Our mission statement tells us. But so many of us take the way that we see our earthly dads and place them on the heavenly Father.
Right.
And now we have a disconnected relationship with him.
Right.
And we hope to bridge that through our relationships with him first.
Yeah.
And then so that they would then trust God.
And that's so good, because you said earlier, for those of us that have had a good relationship with our earthly father, and I've said this, and it took me later, just the past few years in life, where I've gone to my dad and said, Dad, thank you for not putting any barriers between me and God mm-hmm. to be able to view God as Father. He's given me an incredible gift by being a great earthly father, by being there and present and a man of God and all those things, where it's really easy for me to see God as Dad.
Yeah.
Actually, that's probably my default approach to God. I see him as a loving dad yes. first. What a great gift. But the reality is, many people don't have that. And so for them to see God with the love, they see probably God as what? Judge?
Yeah. 100% not there, void.
Right.
Didn't show up. He's disconnected. If he yeah. is, he's
not
far
close,
off.
Right.
He wants really nothing to do with me. He wants to reject me. All of those thoughts that they see in their everyday life, it's my fault why you're distant.
Right.
It's my fault why you left. Right. So like all those things that they hear internally from their earthly dad, or I don't even know him.
Right.
I don't even know who he is, where he is.
So you're trying to bring in mentors.
Yes.
That come in and help speak that truth into these teenagers' lives.
Yeah.
Like, hey, you are worth it. You are good enough. You do matter. I see you, all those things. What are the messages you're trying to, how do you coach your mentors in that?
Yeah. I mean, that's it, is to help them connect with that they're seen.
Mm-hmm.
Because in trauma, when you deal with trauma, there's two questions that you're asking. Your frontal lobe is asking the question, is it safe? And your cerebral cortex is asking, do you care? Okay, when you deal with trauma.
Is it safe?
And do you care? So the answer that we're trying to answer every Wednesday night, so we do family dinner. Kids okay. would come over to our house. They would sit at our table. They would eat dinner at our house. And they would say, we've never done this.
Never had a dinner.
We've never had a dinner.
Family dinner.
If we have dinner, sometimes it's just cereal. Yeah. No one, we don't have a table.
Right.
We don't do this. And I went, we can do this every week. We can sit at a table. Why? Because we want you to go, is it safe? Yes. Do I get something to eat tonight? Yes. Do I have to worry about that tonight? No. Is someone going to shoot up the house today?
Mm-hmm.
No, not tonight.
Not tonight.
So I can shut off all of this, is it safe stuff. And if it takes a little bit, you walk in with fog. You kind of got to help them push
yeah.
the fog out, just like
course.
All of us.
Of
all
course.
Of us have fog in our
life. It takes
life,
time,
right?
yeah.
Yeah. And so if we can answer some of those questions, is it safe? And then once they say yes, once they have a place to sit and just breathe, then they can find out if we care.
Mm.
So think about it. In your life and my life, even as stressful as my day may be, I know at the end of the day, I'm going to go home and I have a space where I can sit and just breathe. They don't have that. Some of them live in houses with 15 other people. They sleep on the floor.
Wow.
They don't have enough space. They're loud. Their lives are loud. Everything around them's loud. There's never any time to really sit and go internal and go, huh,
yeah.
how do I feel?
Right.
Right?
Right. So you're doing that. So that is more or less that's your model.
Yeah.
Is we're and you do, I mean, this is daily ministry for you, so sure. I know it's way more than Wednesday nights, but that's a big part of what you're doing. Sure. Is family dinner. Is it every Wednesday you said?
Every Wednesday night.
And you just bring in the mentors that come in.
Yeah.
And how many students do you have involved at any given time?
So we'll take up to 30 a year. And okay. Here's why. And it's school year to school year. And we do that because we believe that that's the number that keeps it to a place that's small enough that we can impact for the mentors and the students and love them really well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, long term, let's go plant 15 30s in
right.
our city
right.
or somewhere, but let's keep them all to the amount is most that we'll take in is 30, yeah. but then let's go plant a bunch of 30s.
And that's what I love about what you're doing, Ketrick, because it's really easy in church and student ministry to play the numbers game. Like, yeah. hey, let's get, you know, what I love is you're going for just your quality
yeah.
and quantity. And it's scalable as we plant new ones
sure.
all over.
Sure.
But I love that you've intentionally said, you know what, we're going to make this as big as it needs to be, but to still be effective, to still have the one-on-one, to still do those things, because you've seen the need. Like, this is what's going to actually make a difference. So you haven't set out to say, I'm going to try to get 1,000 kids to show up on a Wednesday night.
Right.
You said, no, I want to be able to invest
right.
so they know it's safe
yeah.
and people care.
Yeah,
that's beautiful, man. So how many mentors do you have right now?
Right now we have, well volunteers and mentors.
Okay.
There's probably 35 to 40
okay.
that are there on a Wednesday night. The truth is we actually need guy mentors.
Do you? Okay.
Yeah, there's some guy mentors. It's really easy to get girl mentors. It always has been to get girl volunteers, women volunteers. But it's the guys that we're looking for in our field of,
yeah.
of need.
So if someone's listening and they want to get involved, especially yeah. if it's a dude listening or yep. watching and there's like, hey man, this sounds like something I could do. Because really what you're asking them to do is pretty simple, right? You got to yeah. give up some time. There's probably yeah. some training that goes along?
Oh yeah.
So you train them, but it's showing up to dinner.
Yep.
Investing time.
Yeah.
How would someone get involved?
So, I mean, the best way is just to go to, you can go to teendreamcenter.com
okay.
and go, and you can send us an email there. You can send it to my email, ketrick@crosspoint.tv. But go to teendreamcenter.com. That'll keep you up with where you can get straight to us in that way.
Yep.
And let us know. Just say, hey man, I'm interested in I heard this and I would love to be a part of
being a mentor. Yeah. And what is the ask? Like, what does it require?
So it's every Wednesday night from 6:30 to 8:30 for the family dinner. We have to do a leaders meeting at 6:00. But then 2 to 3 times outside of the Wednesday night a month.
Okay.
So it's not a ton. Sometimes it turns into more than that.
Sure.
And the hangout time, but that's really what we ask. And it's just so much simpler than we make it.
Yeah.
You know,
talk about some of the challenges. This is messy work.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Right. I mean, this is not sure. super, super pretty, super clean. And sure. we've got some amazing stories and I actually want to ask you
yeah.
about, tell us some of the stories here in a minute. But talk about some of the challenges. I mean, it's messy.
It's trench work, man. I mean, if you could take two worlds and put them together, you would. Mm-hmm. And the truth is we know that in our world, it's really hard to bring together. Even for me, when I first started this, like, here's what I know. I said sorry more in the first 2 years than I ever said I got it right. I said, will you forgive me? Man, I didn't understand it. I don't see.
Right.
I see through a different lens. Will you help me understand what I don't see?
So even in your trying to help the first couple of years, you were just kind of stepping in landmines, just trying to figure out.
I can write the book, What Not to Do Your First 2 Years of Inner City Ministry. 100%. No one will steal that because I probably should.
Right,
but,
yeah.
But in that, it's true.
Yeah.
Like, but the thing that I saw, these kids are so resilient and they're so trusting when they know that you're trying.
There's probably was some grace for like, hey, at least he's out here trying to help us.
Unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, but you learn, like you learn more from these kids because to go through what they've gone through at such a young age, they're so resilient that I couldn't do it.
Mm.
And so they're so forgiving when they see someone that loves them and cares for them. And there's just different things when you see through a different lens. I'll give you an example of, there's a couple different moments of, I mean, I pulled up on Sunday mornings where two of our kids are going to get baptized here at Cross Point on Sunday morning. And we pull up and our kids come and run and jump in the car. And they tell us that they just saw a drive-by happen and a guy bled out. They tried to keep alive.
Gosh, man.
And they're just sitting. I mean, this is a mile and a half from here.
Yeah. From our downtown location.
Yeah. And, you know, that's just the reality, right? or one Instagram post from one of our kids. This is just another lens, right? Like, used to, I'd be like, why are they doing this? But like one time, one of our kids was on his Instagram holding a gun, and I'm like, oh man, he's representing Teen Dream Center, you know, all this mm-hmm, things, you know, mm-hmm. and that's where I'm going in my head, right? Mm-hmm. And then, so I've learned, instead of like, when I see them, calling them out on that stuff, asking them, hey, tell me about that.
Yeah.
Right? So one of the kids, I said, hey, tell me about you holding that gun. What was that about? He said, well, the guy that shot my brother 7 times drove through the neighborhood this past week and said, I'm next. I just wanted him to know that I was packing.
Wow. You're just trying to send him a message. It Whoa. Changed your perspective.
Oh, you're trying to survive. And that's when that whole first 2 years was learning about survival. That survival will make you do really crazy things when you don't know you have any other options and no one else is in your corner. Go yeah. get yours, because no one else is there for you.
Yeah. Wow. Man, it's hard to even imagine.
Yeah.
It's hard even to get yeah. there, but that's happening in our yeah. backyard.
Last year, or one of our girls last year, we get a phone call on a Wednesday night. Someone had shot her in the leg, right in her house, right in the front of her yard. And two of our kids that are in the mentor program, one was her friend. Mm-hmm. She's in the mentor program today, and the other one is still too. But I mean, she got shot right in the leg, and yeah. the other one saw it. It's like, what happens, the trauma that you experience in those moments at such a young age.
Right.
The kid that I said that they saw that kid bleed out, mm-hmm. one was 7th grade. He was a 7th grader seeing a person bleed out that they're yeah. trying to keep alive. It messes with you.
Of course.
And I've never seen that.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, we've never had to. Mm-mm. Most of us will never have to live through that kind of thing. Right. That could shape your future.
Yeah.
You know, talk about some of the success stories.
Yeah.
Because you've been doing this long enough now where you're starting to see the yeah. discipleship, the mentorship start Man. To pay off.
It's one of those things. It's so true. I mean, when I look at so many things that's happened, you start off with like the small things where you get to see them start to become a family.
Yeah.
Like, when they go to the same school and now they're in this program together, and then you see someone like Miracle start freshman year, and RK is a senior, and you see Miracle get picked on, and then RK stands up for her, right? Mm-hmm. And then you see her come back on a Wednesday night and say, RK saved my life.
Wow.
Right? So you take that, or then you see someone like another one of our students that changes schools because he believes that there's more opportunity at another school. So he takes a bus at 4:50 in the morning to the MTA, the public transit bus, to take 2 different buses to get to school by 7:05. And what does he do that year? He plays basketball. He'd never finished a year of basketball. Hmm. Plays basketball, finishes, gets a scholarship to Trevecca.
Nice.
That year. All because he sees something different, a right. future that he can have a hold of.
You've given right? him a different path.
Yeah. And you can see that it's possible.
Yeah.
From people like another one of our students that volunteers every Sunday here at the mm-hmm. Nashville campus that's been around forever. He's in college now. And just the things that he said, his mom began to get changed. She's the one that comes up and says, hey, I'm checking out this church. I really feel like this is my church home now because of the way that you love my kid.
Mm.
You look at... last summer when we were in the middle of doing a relay race that two of our kids, JJ and Chris, both give their life to Christ in just a quick conversation, then get baptized here on Sunday.
Wow.
You look at our purpose program mm-hmm. is where we partner with Frothy Monkey. And
yeah.
We have a coffee
yeah.
program
let's
here.
Let's talk about that a little
well,
bit.
Well, and yeah. this leads into some of these stories.
Yeah.
But with that is we partner with Frothy Monkey. Our kids get paid $10 an hour. They bag coffee, they ship it, and we do a subscription coffee company to where we'll ship it to your door monthly, and they have their name written on the bag, and we send it out. But we're teaching them job skill classes, personal finance classes.
Yeah.
And RK and Angel, last summer, they were working doing the coffee, and also we partner with the Shine Project making jewelry here at the TDC, and they were making $10 an hour, but working like 25 hours a week in the summertime. Well, those girls like begin to change as we begin to spend time with them. We do like 10-minute Thursdays where we just sit in the room and be like, hey, tell us about just anything.
Yeah.
And at first they were very standoffish, but by the end of the summer, they were changed. RK goes to camp. She finds Jesus. Her life has changed. She then, her and Angel both, they continue to work the coffee. We do these fall and spring mini internships to get them involved in somewhere in our community of something they're interested in doing.
Mm-hmm.
So RK, she goes and she shadows the only black female judge in Davidson County for 2 years in a row. Blows her mind.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, look at the possibility, right?
Yeah.
So then she decides, I'm gonna work on my ACT score. We have one of our mentors that's a scientist. She's brilliant. And so she helps her in that, saying, okay, you wanna score this? Great, let's work on it. Let's go just do ACT prep. And some of our mentors got behind all that. And then she scores a 31 on her ACT.
Wow, man.
Her and Angel both get full rides to Belmont University.
Man.
Right? So
that, and that's no small, I mean, if you know Belmont, that's a big deal.
Some people are listening going, oh man, I don't like them right now. Yeah. I've got debt. I'm out of my eyeballs, right?
Yeah, I'm still paying Belmont.
Right? There you go. But because of them seeing something different,
mm-hmm.
They're the first ones to out of their generation to do something different. Eric, another one of our kids, first one to go to college, moves to California, goes and does the thing, right?
Right.
And then 2 months ago, this is the story, one of our students, we go to our retreat, and one night I'm talking and we go into our small group time. And all of a sudden, I had them write on a rock something that they wanted, someone they wanted to forgive or something they wanted to give up. And he says in the small group, he's sitting on the floor, and I'm asking him anything, and he says, I want to forgive Eric. And I said, who's Eric? And he said, it's the guy that killed my brother. And he said, I just realized tonight God didn't do that.
Wow.
I realized, but God's getting me through that. And I said, whoa, hold on. When did you come to this realization about God didn't do it? And he said, oh, just about 45 minutes ago when you were talking.
Man.
And to see that moment, for him to trust us with that kind of thing that he's been holding,
mm-hmm.
is unbelievable. But it's lots of sowing seed.
Yeah.
It's lots of us just sitting with, and it seems like we're doing nothing, but man, in return, we're doing so much just to be heard, right?
And it's changing the course of history for their whole family. Like, this is a generational type ministry, because when you help them shift their mindset, right, to what is actually possible, what we can actually achieve with our lives, it's going to change their children, their children's children. I mean, the whole family tree begins to shift. And that is the hard work. Like, this is long-term ministry.
Yeah.
This isn't the quick, short fix. I mean, this is, it's hard work, but the results are long-term.
It's it. And it's teaching them, it's not about handouts, but a hand up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, all of us had our hands up. Someone handed up something to us to help us. We're standing on the shoulders of the people behind us and the things that we get to do.
Yeah.
And that's what we get to give them, is an opportunity, not for us to be powerful, to teach them that they're powerful and that they can do it.
Yeah.
Because they've made it this far. There's things that God has in store for them to go do.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't. We just want to teach them that it's already in them, that they can go and do it.
Dude, this fires you up, doesn't it?
Oh man,
it's why you do it.
That's absolutely.
I can tell when you're talking. I mean, just you feel this deeply.
Yeah.
What does the future look like for TDC, for Teen Dream Center? And we'll get to the anything's possible. What are you dreaming about? But I just want to know, like, what's next for you guys?
Yeah. So I mean, TDC is becoming its own 501c3.
Yeah.
And so in that, there's
That's
opportunity.
Exciting.
It's so exciting.
What does that enable you to do when you become your own organization? So,
So
Teen Dream Center has been a part of CrossPoint as, like, organizationally, and it'll always be a part of CrossPoint.
Sure.
None of that's changing.
Yeah.
But when you actually establish your own 501c3, what does that do for you?
Yeah. So it just gives us opportunity to go get grants if need be for certain things that we want to do. But it also gives us opportunity just to reach out to a broader group of people that that desire to be involved in whatever way possible.
Right.
Because we have dreams long term of helping students start businesses. Because there's some of our kids that have entrepreneurial skills that should start businesses, and that we can help them with that. Like, I would love to sit down with a kid and all of a sudden we go, oh, you have the skills. What do you want to do? You want to start a lawn mowing company? Oh my gosh, awesome.
Right.
Here, I'm going to give you $5,000 towards that. And you have to work here at the coffee company and raise the other five or the coffee program side.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
And then once you do that, we'll help you with everything to get you on the ground. Then For the kid that's going to go to college, awesome. For the kid that may be on a fifth grade reading level or may not be there, college may not be his thing. Now we have an outlet to plug him into someone that has been where they are and show them that it's possible to do something greater with their life.
Yeah, it's the hand up, not the hand out.
Absolutely.
Coming alongside them, helping, giving them the things that they didn't have, whether it's in their family of origin or whatever else it is, you're able to come alongside
them.
Right. And you going in this direction enables you to really scale.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So now, if there's any church in the inner city, or if there's someone that's trying to figure out a program to do like this, man, we can help them.
Yeah.
And help them find the resources to do so.
Man, what is God doing in you through all this? I'm sitting here, you're doing all this stuff, but you can't help but be changed in the middle of it. I'm just curious. I know it's a curveball question, but what is God showing you right now?
Man, it is... For so long, and I feel like in this last year, the revelation that I feel like I've received through all of this is that I've spent a lot of my life doing things for God when He just wants to do things with me. That's it. God, for every single one of us, He doesn't want us to do things for Him. He just wants to do things with. And I think I've learned that through these students' lives. They just want to do things with us. What does your son want to do? He just wants to do things with you.
Yeah.
It doesn't even matter what it is. He just wants to do it with you.
Right.
Right? And like, that's the deal. God is calling all of us to be people that do things with Him.
Right.
Right? And I know in this life, the other part of it is that there's just so much. We sit in two different worlds. If we live in this world long enough, we are going to become prisoners or captives, what Isaiah 61 tells us. Mm. Right? It's that all of us are either prisoners or captives. We either got there because of something we have done, or we've got there because of something that someone else has done to us. But what God promises us is that for the prisoner or the captive, regardless of how you got there, there's freedom.
Yeah.
And that's what we want to be a part of.
That's so good, man. We say everyone has a story to tell and a step to take. That's kind of the mantra of this podcast. And the big step I'd love for people to take is become a mentor.
I mean,
get involved with the Teen Dream Center. This is good ground to work in.
Totally.
It's great. But even just what we said in freedom, spiritually, people listening and watching, what encouragement would you give us as far as a step to take towards freedom? Because I think there's things in all of our lives to a certain degree of spectrum.
Yeah.
But there's greater levels of freedom. There's greater levels of freedom for me today, for you today, for Pastor Kevin. I mean, whoever it is, this is not about, you know, a certain category, a certain whatever. Like, everyone could take a step towards Jesus based on what God's showing you. How would you encourage us?
Yeah. I think when it's stuff that we're walking through in life, trying to become who God has created us to be, I think the only way that we get there, and this is what I'm learning through the TDC, is like doing life with the same thing with people.
Yeah.
Because shame only grows in the dark.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Say that again.
Shame only grows in the dark. But the moment that you let it out and the moment that you release it out of your mouth to someone else, it now loses its power.
Yeah.
And we know this, that Jesus is the only thing that we can surrender to that will give us power. Everything else we surrender to will take our power away.
Man.
And when you live in community, even if it's one. Now, the Bible tells us, don't cast your pearls before the swine, right? Not everyone can handle your stuff, but find that person that can and help them walk out life with you.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest thing I've learned through this whole process.
That's beautiful, man. Dude, I just feel like what you're doing right now is... it's such important kingdom work that we may never know. I mean, I get emotional thinking about it because we may never know on this side of heaven what all is happening.
Yeah.
These mentors that you have, I picture that someday people walking up to you and your mentors and your team just being like, hey, I'm the great, great grandson of Antonio or of who you fill in the blank, whatever. Yeah. And I'm here today because...
Dude, it has to happen, and here's why. My mom, looking at my mom's life, she had the craziest childhood I've ever seen. Out of seven brothers and sisters, she's the only one that got out. My mom got pregnant age 15. My parents got married age 16. And today, why I'm sitting here in this in this room is because of a woman who said it can be different. And that's why I'm here.
Yeah.
And so every person has an opportunity to change. Every person has the ability to live a life, right? Infinitely beyond our highest thoughts, hopes, and dreams, Ephesians 3, 19 and 20, right? Jeremiah 1 tells us that you're God's chosen instrument. That when you're in mother's womb, he chose you and approved of you. That there is a plan for your life, regardless of how you got here, regardless of whether you think you're a mistake, regardless of whether you think you've messed up too much, that it's never too late for you to enter into what he has. It's always been there, it's still there, and it will be there until you take your last breath.
Yeah.
And it's always an invitation. It's never, I want to make you.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
It's an invite. And if you'll take him on the invite, he'll take you in. But he's saying, "Will you? I don't want to control you.
Right.
I just want you to trust me." And that's what he's asking.
Yeah.
We're not meant to control people. We're meant to free people.
Yeah.
To fully become who they already have always been.
Yeah.
And that's what we get to do.
I love that, man.
Yeah.
I love that. So here's a question we ask everybody in every episode. And you're going to have to come back on because we got to keep updating us on how things are going. And as you're expanding and growing, sure. I just think that you're just in the beginning stage of what God's doing. Team Dream Center, Crosspoint. I mean, as you know, we are so sold out to what you're doing and being a partner with you guys. And we can't wait to just continue to see this thing grow and expand. So I want to have you on from time to time just to update us, tell us some more stories, what's going on. But we ask everyone that comes on the anything's possible question because that's part of our mission, our mantra. We believe with Jesus, anything's possible.
Yeah.
And if that's true, what are you dreaming for?
Man, let's start businesses for students that they can be a part of to help them learn that they can be successful in this life. Like let's give them all the skills and the tools and then help them take that on. Whether it be like for us long-term coffee shop, long-term, and that'll just be the hub, right?
Yeah.
To give them the skills so that then they can go and start businesses and be successful in this world. Like, let's do it. Let's teach them who they are in God. See them who Jesus thinks that they are, who he says that they are. Let them see that they're chosen instruments, that they were placed here in this time, in no other time in history, to make an impact now. And they're not defined by what's happened or how they got here. They're defined by him. And once they get it, then let's empower them to let them take the step and do it.
Yeah.
Right? Like we all want to be successful.
Right.
Let's teach them where success comes from and what he has.
Yeah.
And let's do it.
Man, I'm fired. I'm ready to run through a wall right now.
Let's go.
Let's do it.
Come on.
I'll follow you. Man, I love you. I love what you're doing.
Thank you.
And I just want you to know, I'm thankful for you. I'm thankful for your faithfulness. I'm thankful for, this is hard work. But I'm thankful for who you are. I'm thankful. There's things that people don't know about you that every week that you're in town, you show up here and you pray with Pastor Kevin and us before. Like, you're one of the ones that are sometimes in front of the camera, sometimes behind the scenes, but you just stay faithful to Jesus, man. And you are a source of encouragement in my life and inspiration. So, man, I love you. Thanks for being on today.
Thanks for having me.
All right, bud.